Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Blog Talk Radio show, Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me on the line is Gordon Glantz, and we got a lot to pack into this show, so let's get right to it. And we'll start with the Phillies. And 1-5 on this road trip after getting swept by the Cubs today. Outscored 17-5 during the series, and they didn't even have to face Jake Arrieta. Gordon, I'll ask you the question I asked. We've been discussing on and off the last 2 weeks, but I asked it in my Phillies notebook this week on PhillyFanatics.com, and the question is, are the Phillies for real?
I guess you would have to define what for real is. Is for real a World Series contender? Then in that context, no, they're not for real. But are they beyond a team that's going to be picking first in the draft, you know, like they are right now? I think they've moved beyond that as well. I think they're for real in the sense that they are, you know, a team that's going to, you know, if they come in around 500, I'm not saying they will, but I think they have a shot at it. You know, they're not always going to win. You know, they're always going to win, lose. It doesn't really go like that. You get swept in a series, and you come back and you sweep a series, or you win 2 out of 3, and then you lose 2 out of 3, and, you know, maybe kind of comes out around even, you know, in the end. And I think they are more for real than we thought. I had them as no more than like a 70-win team going into the season, and I think they can get into that 80 to 82-win range now. They seem to have some chemistry going. I think the last time I spoke to you from this location, which was out in my car at my sister-in-law's house, family get-together, I was asked about Pete McCannon's extension, and then for some reason my phone line went dead, and I never got to answer the question. But what I would have said then, I think, holds true. I think the reason they extended his contract was to create a sense of stability, particularly with a roster that was turning over and to a lot of young players, and I think that was a real solid move. By, you know, whether it was Klentak or a combination of guys, I think it was a solid move. You know, whether Pete McCannon's the guy for the whole long haul here, we don't know, but I think that sends the right message to everybody that this thing has settled down. It's not Grand Central Station with players coming and going and the lineups changing and the rotation changing. And this is pretty much what we're going to try to go to war with, and this is the manager we're going to war with. And I think that kind of stable, it created a sense of stability, and I think you're seeing it on the field a little bit. A lot of times the message you send to the players goes a long way, and I think they have some new faces with guys who are trying to prove themselves, who are getting opportunities, some guys who are getting second chances, which are, in baseball, a lot of times people make the most of their second chances. You look at that Phillies team with new guys like Victorino and Worth, you know, they were big-time prospects who, you know, kind of didn't kind of cut it where they were the first time around. So, the Phillies have some guys like that. They have some people like Franco who are, you know, homegrown through their own system. It's certainly reason to be excited. Is that for real? I think they are, they're for real in the sense that they're going to be a much more competitive team, and they're for real in the sense that we could feel good about them, you know, next year and a year beyond that, where it was always a very bleak picture. You really couldn't see tomorrow from today before with the Phillies. So in that sense, I'd say they're for real. Are they going to be playing in October, November this year? Probably not.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's exactly what I wrote in my column, Gordon. I didn't preface it for you intentionally, see where you'd go with it. But, yeah, it depends on the definition. I don't think they're a championship contender by any stretch. I'm not quite as optimistic. I'm enjoying the ride so far. But I even pointed this out last week in my previous Phillies notebook before this one that they were overachieving. They were scraping by with the unbelievable number of one-run victories. And, yeah, they deserve credit for that. And Pete McCannon deserves credit, and the players deserve credit, and certainly the attitude and a positive feeling around the team certainly is important in that. But, as they face, and I think Ron said this, as they face better competition, there are a lot of good teams they hadn't faced yet. I think they're going to come back to earth a little bit. I agree with you that doesn't mean, you know, you're competing for the number one pick in the draft either. But I think they're going to settle down now to being a, I think the 26 and 24 now, they're going to settle down into being a sub 500 team. It depends who they play. They're better than the worst teams in the league. But, you know, I look at this upcoming stretch and I see the, they got 3 games with the Nationals. They're not going to face Strasburg, thank goodness, who's 9-0. You know, they get four with the Brewers. That's a little break, but then they're right back with the Cubs again. So it's a pretty tough homestand. Then they go on the road and face the Nationals and the Blue Jays. Blue Jays aren't gangbusters this year, but I think they're a pretty tough hitting team. You know, they come have the Blue Jays at home, then they get a little break, and then they go out on the West Coast again. Or I shouldn't say again, go out on the West Coast. I think they have the Twins, which is a nice little break because the Twins stink. But, you know, they're out there against the Giants and Diamondbacks and some of the others. So, I've really enjoyed these first 2 months, but I think we're going to see the Phillies settle back into maybe not awful like some of us expected, but at least a sub-500, still a competitive team, but sub-500. And Gordon, but I think you're right, your last point, which is that we do see tomorrow. You know, you see that some hope for the future, and I think that's a huge change in this team. So I don't want to come off as too negative. I just think the record's going to settle back down closer to what we expected it to be. You mentioned 80 or 82. I think if they're around 80 or 82 wins, I'd be thrilled. I don't expect that, but I'd be thrilled. There is another issue with this Phillies team, Gordon, I want to ask you about, and that is Ryan Howard, who's now batting 159. Has still stuck on 8 homers, which he had a lot early, and he hasn't had one since, I think, May 11th. What are they going to do with him, or what should they do with him?
I don't know. It's a real tough call. I mean, you don't want to just cut him loose. That's a real tough thing. You want to get something back for him. But I think they're at the point now. I don't think they could give him away for a mid-level prospect minor leaguer and agree to pay the rest of his salary and even find somebody to do that. I think what they have to do with him is just, you know, kind of keep him around but not play him as much. And, you know, maybe a point's going to come where he, by necessity, has to come back into the lineup. Maybe there's some injuries or some other guys are slumping, and maybe he just works through it a little bit and starts to pick it up. But right now it's just painful to watch. I'd rather see them just, you know, go with the Tommy Joseph. And it's for a little while, we've been waiting a long time to see Tommy Joseph at the major league level. And I wouldn't mess with that at all. I would just to put Howard in there. I know when you play so many American League teams, they tried him as a DH, but that was painful as well. You could always come up with, you know, he jammed his pinky in batting practice and stick him on a 15-day DL. I mean, there's things you could do just to get through it. It's only one more year. And so I guess what is like a $10 million you have to eat after this year. You can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I believe that's what it is, something in that range.
It's last year.
Right. So, I guess you have to get through it unless, you know, somebody just decides either at the trading deadline or at that second trading deadline, the waiver, you know, that deadline that comes up right before September, where a team may just want a left-handed bat that they're not really obligated to beyond 1 month, you know, a team that's in the race. Maybe you can get something for him. I mean, I would, you know, just somebody, you know, even if somebody has like a pitcher who is out in Tommy John surgery and you just take a flyer on a guy. I mean, just anything you could say you got something back for him and move on. So I think those would be the opportunities. Until then, you just have to hang on to him and maybe a break, you know, until, you know, somebody cools off or somebody gets hurt, and then you reinsert him, and maybe he, even in a short period of time, you know, produces a little. But right now, just watching him, I don't know if he's indifferent, if he lost it, or what the story is. But, you know, he is a guy who's done it once before. You would think he'd have something in the tank somewhere. Even when you get a flat tire, usually able to go down the road a little bit on it. So, you know, the tire is definitely flat with him, but hopefully we can at least get to the rest stop and call for help or something. So, I guess the rest stop to call for help would be, you know, to call AAA would be the one on the trading deadline.
I thought you were leading us into our Indy 500 NASCAR conversation there with the tire. Record.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, yeah.
No, you're right. Maybe they've already worn the tread thin there and to continue the tire analogy. And maybe they've already rolled down the road with that, and it's at the end. I mean, he's hitting 159, and that was, you know, basically not starting against left-handers. You know, if he was starting against left-handers, that average might be even lower. But yeah, you know, you talked about the designated hitter against the Tigers. He had two hits in that in the last two games of that series. I think it was 2 for 9, and his average went up. You know, it got higher after going 2 for 9 in those last two games. But you're right,
and they were kind of feeble hits. If you remember,
yeah,
they were kind of feeble hits. Yeah.
He didn't rope them. But you're right. Whoever they trade him to, they're going to have to pick up the salary regardless. But you know, that might be better for him than having him sit here, and better for the team, because there's no point in playing him. I mean, you know, why would you play? You know, you got to see what Tommy Joseph's about, and why would you play Ryan Howard except when it's time for Tommy Joseph to get a little rest? Why the heck would you? You know, what point is there in playing him, especially the way he's hitting? But what point is there in playing him? So he doesn't make them more competitive, and you know, he's not helping you find out about the future. So tough decision there, tough situation for Pete McCann. It'll be, and really. The management has to come in and help him out with that in terms of moving Howard at some point, because you know, I don't know how long he can sit on the bench, just be a, you know, pinch hitter. And McCann has already started Tommy Joseph against right-handed pitchers this week, so we'll see how that situation shakes itself out. Glenn, we'll turn to Philadelphia Eagles, who are between these mini camps and coming up another one, I think, this week. Before the following week, we get to the mandatory one, and then we'll get into the Fletcher Cox story, but. The little news this week was that you know, Doug Peterson had said during Bradford's absence and after he came back, you know, he's my guy. Sam Bradford's the starter. And then this week, and I believe it was during the morning show with Angelo Cataldi, offensive coordinator Frank Reich said, and I'm going to quote him here, that the quarterback order, the idea that the quarterback order is set is, and now here's the quote, probably not the right impression. And Reich also spoke about establishing a culture of competition. Explain how that comment does not really contradict what Peterson said. Gordon, what's your impression of what's happening there with Frank Reich and with the quarterback situation?
I think it's reading too much into it. I guess, you know, we've had some coaches that kind of micromanaged the last few years, and Andy Reid and Chip Kelly. And I think a lot of these the coordinators and assistant coaches were, you know, were asked to kind of watch what they say, and that they all have to kind of use the same coach speak lingo. And I don't know if Doug Peterson's the same type of guy, and maybe it just kind of came out a little differently and it sounded a little differently. But I think when it's all said and done, I think what Peterson has said, it holds true. I mean, I think they want somebody to, I think they want Daniel to push Bradford, and they want Wentz to push Daniel, and I don't think there's any question about that. But, you know, for this team to this year, it serves them no purpose to go 4-12. All you're doing is helping, you know, the Cleveland Browns with about a draft pick that they traded away in the Carson Wentz deal. So, you know, and the guy who gives you the best chance to at least coming in that 7-9, 8-8, 9-7 range is Sam Bradford. So, you know, and I think they know that. I think that's what Doug Peterson was saying when he was saying the job's his. But from, I guess, somebody who's, a notch below, who's working with guys every day, he wants them to know, he wants them to bring their best out of practice field every day, and that they can improve their chances of pushing the other guy, you know, if he doesn't want anybody to think it's impossible for them, you know, their situation, if they play well, you know, it's going to be noticed. But, you know, I think when it all shakes out, the master plan here is for Sam Bradford to be the quarterback, you know, as long as he's effective and healthy, which, you know, I think he can be effective. Can he be healthy is always a question with him. But I think he wants the other guys to be ready, because there's a chance he won't be effective, and there's a chance he won't be healthy. So he, you know, they don't want to hand the keys to the kingdom completely to Bradford right now. And I don't think Wentz or Daniel are the guys, the type of guys who are going to slack off anyway. But I just think maybe, I don't know how I didn't hear it that day. I don't know how the question was framed by Cataldi. So, sometimes he asks, things in a weird kind of way that you kind of answer awkwardly, and then it kind of sets off a whole kind of firestorm for a few days. And everybody is so intense on the Eagles, and I'm as guilty as anybody, that you hear anything that sounds a little different than what you heard before, and you really kind of pounce on it and try to dissect it and put it under the microscope. But in this case, you know, I really think their whole idea, the way they mapped this whole thing out to get Daniel, to get Carson Wentz, was to get the most they could out of Bradford for this year and then look at moving on from there. So I think that's the plan. But he wants all these quarterbacks pushing each other, you know. So I think that's what Reich was trying to say.
I think you're right that that's the plan. I guess my one question I want to throw out there was the possibility. Is there a possibility that during these mini camps, Carson Wentz showed that he's maybe further along than maybe Reich expected, and maybe that's sort of one reason he made those comments. Do you think that's a possibility?
Oh, yeah, I think it may have been directed more at him than anybody else. I mean, Chase Daniel's been in the league a long time. He's been a backup his whole career. He's now the highest-paid backup in the league for reasons that I'm not quite sure of, but I'm sure, you know, he was sought after. So I never saw the guy play in a preseason game. Maybe he's the Johnny Unitas of preseason football. I don't know, but he knows what it's about being a backup quarterback in this league and how to prepare himself. And I think he has that reputation. But I think it was mostly directed at Carson Wentz because here's a guy, you know, he's been the cover of Sports Illustrated. He's the talk of the town, and yet he's your third string quarterback. And I think he wants him not to be in the mindset that I'm just a third string quarterback. He wants him to know, wants him to come to work every day, you know, and not see himself that way. But I don't think everything we've been sold about the kid, whether it's true or not, and I think it is true, we've been told and sold, is that that's not who he is. So, you know, I guess he's maybe encouraged by what he's seen so far, and he just wants him to keep his head up.
Interesting thoughts, Gordon, and interesting comments on the Eagles, as always, but very insightful. Let's switch to another sport, and I follow you on social media, so I have to ask you today, are you a Ben Simmons guy today or a Brandon Ingram today?
I've been Ben Simmons. And I'll tell you why, because I kind of look at it now, you know, the Sixers next year get, and I notice maybe overthinking it, the Sixers next year get the Lakers pick no matter what. That's correct, right? Because sometimes these things get a little loopy, but they get the Lakers pick no matter what, correct? No matter what the
next
Lakers
year,
finish.
I forget if it's top protected again or not. If it's top three again and then they get it the following year, I forget. Now I'd have to look that up.
Okay. I would think that even though, Ingram's a better fit for the Sixers right now, and he may end up being the better player because he's a year younger. I talked about that when I talked about who I like better. I don't know if he makes the Lakers much better this year. I think Simmons would make the Lakers a lot better this year. I think Simmons would be the better rookie this year. So for that kind of extrapolating it out to a step two, you know, you want the Lakers, if you're going to get that Lakers pick, and you could almost think that the Sixers may be a better team than the Lakers this year. The Sixers may pick 6th, 7th, 8th, somewhere there, not picking in the top 3 this year, but if they can get the Lakers pick somewhere in the top 5, they may not be able to put all the pieces together with Ingram the way they would be able to with Simmons this year. So that's one thing. And the other thing, you know, I'm not a big fan right now of just trading Jahlil Okafor, but there's a lot of talk about it. I mean, and sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire, that the Sixers are going to turn around probably on draft night to the team that drafts Chris Dunn, who was probably the best player in college basketball last year. I think he won the Naismith Award, if I'm not mistaken, as the best player. And, they would have an opportunity to trade Okafor to whatever team, although if it's a little risky trading him to the Celtics, because then you're going to have to face him, 8-10 times a year for the next 8-10 years, you know. So, you know, trading him to an Eastern Conference rival is not the most enticing idea. But if you trade Okafor and get Dunn back, and you have Dunn, Simmons, and, you know, a healthy Embiid and Saric, you know, along with Noel, I mean, you really have an outstanding young nucleus there. So you're getting done in the picture. Instead of a lot of big men kind of bumping into each other, trying to battle for minutes, I kind of like the way the team would compete right out of the gate there. And that's kind of what I'm looking for them to do this year. And I think if you could have Simmons, who's the most exciting player for people, slept on raw ability, even though he has, like we talked about. I mean, there are issues about his character and how he's kind of going invisible against better competition and better games. And the guy who's really played 4 years of college basketball and was considered, you know, the best player in college basketball last year, and Chris Dunn, and fills that gaping hole they have at point guard. You know, we could be talking about an exciting young team to watch, kind of like we are with the Phillies. Not a playoff team, but an exciting young team that's really going places where we can actually see it tomorrow. So in that sense, I think you see it a little more if you do that Simmons and Dunn thing together, than if you kind of just take Ingram. And my original plan was, well, just take Ingram, keep the three big men, see if Embiid's healthy. If he's healthy, maybe you move one to trading deadline. But that is, again, that's again, possibly your slow road to nowhere that we've been on. So I guess it's a little bit of my impatience showing, a little bit of you know, we can catch the express here and maybe get from here to there a little quicker. And, yeah, so that's kind of my thinking with Simmons.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, back and forth. We're in the negative Simmons cycle this week, but I think we'll see that go back and forth right up to the draft. We have a couple more weeks to talk about it, so we'll definitely get into it. And you're right, keep an eye. I was going to ask you about it, you already brought it up. Let's keep an eye on that, on the Okafor rumors, and if it makes sense. And you know, it might if they think Embiid's healthy. Of course, if they trade him and Embiid's not healthy, then you're looking at possible that would be a big mistake if Embiid turns out not to be fully healthy. Let's switch to Stanley Cup Finals start tomorrow night. And it's the first time the Sharks have ever been in the Stanley Cup Finals. I believe they've been around 25 years. It's 25th year, I think. And they've never been to the Finals, so they're there, having beaten the Blues in six in the Western Conference Finals. And they're facing the Penguins. Though, as I pointed out on PhillyTonight.com in my Stanley Cup Final preview, you know, the impression that the Penguins are this experienced championship team, yeah, they have Crosby and Malkin and Fleury is not playing, but really, you know, it's hard to believe, but the Penguins haven't been in the finals since 2009, which is, just to give us a little perspective, you know, Chris Pronger was helping the Flyers get to the Stanley Cup Finals that year with Jeff Carter and Mike Richards. So that's how long ago that is. Gordon, how do you see this final series shaping up with the Sharks and the Penguins?
Well, I got this feeling in the pit of my stomach, probably somewhere during the second half of the season, that looking at the Penguins roster and the way they've kind of restructured it a little bit. Well, I'm not really messing too much with the core nucleus, but they've kind of restructured, you know, the role players around it. That they were looking at a cup. I know they really felt they could be a cup team, the kind of team that can make a deep playoff run, and that's kind of what they've done. So, you know, I like San Jose. San Jose has a lot of really good players, and a lot of guys are stepping up in the postseason. But the people that didn't need to step up are stepping up, and I certainly don't think they're going to roll over. But to me, Pittsburgh looks like a cup team right now, and, you know, I know it's not a proper thing to say in the Philadelphia area, but you have to kind of call it as you see it sometimes. And, you know, part of me, I mean, we all hate the Penguins. That's just what you're supposed to do. And you know, the look on Crosby's face and everything else. But, you know, part of me is like, you know, you talked about San Jose having a team 25, 26 years, first time in the finals. It still kind of galls at me that, you know, the Flyers have been around longer. It's been a long time since they've won a cup. I don't like when these other, like, I call them rented teams. And I know 25, 26 years isn't a rented team. But they haven't been in hockey that long. I don't know how big hockey is even in San Jose. Well, the team would get pretty good crowds, probably from transplants.
Yeah.
You know, so in that sense, you know, Pittsburgh's already won a bunch of cups. What's one more? Whereas, you know, here's a new city. You know, they probably wouldn't have known what a hockey puck was when the Flyers won their back-to-back cups, you know, with a chance to win a cup. So I know that seems like kind of weird kind of logic. Maybe it's just preparing myself for the inevitable, because I would always take more joy in seeing Pittsburgh lose. But at least if they win it, and I think they probably will in six, that, you know, at least it prevents some other team from just kind of popping out of nowhere you know, giving a city a Stanley Cup when probably the average citizen may not even be quite sure what a Stanley Cup is. It may be the equivalent of when the Philadelphia Soul won the championship a few years ago here.
I think you're being hard on the hockey legacy there on the West Coast, Gordon. Didn't they have the California Golden Seals back then when the Flyers won the Cup?
They did have the California Golden Seals in, what, the Oakland, San Francisco area. I think they didn't last. They didn't last very long, and they weren't very good. So, and they didn't draw very many people. So, but yes, they did. They did, and LA has always supported the team. We'll give them credit there.
Yeah, the Sharks actually have a pretty good fan base. They've drawn fairly well, and I think one of the interesting things I did the preview and is that you look at the additions on these teams, and it seems like they're getting everything out of their additions. I mean, both teams, Peter DeBoer is a new coach for the Sharks. He's done a good job. Mike Sullivan, of course, the Penguins switched coaches in the middle of the year, and you had Mike Sullivan, the team was a defensive team under the previous coach. He kind of let them go and took advantage of the speed that team has, and you can see them. You watch them, and they're really fast. But their defense is still pretty good. I do think that the Sharks, if there's an advantage for the Sharks, it's a deeper defense that they do have, especially with Trevor Daley gets hurt for the Penguins. I think the Sharks have a deeper defense. I mean, guys, nobody's ever heard of, like most people haven't heard of, you and I have, like Mark Edward Vlasic and those guys down there, who's like a shutdown defenseman that nobody ever hears about because he doesn't score a lot of goals. Everybody knows about Brent Burns and Chris Letang. But the Sharks, I think, have more depth on defense. The interesting thing, again, going back to the first year thing, they added Joel Ward, who's a veteran forward who's played a nice role for them in the playoffs. I'm blanking on his name. It's the defenseman they got from the Penguins, Paul Martin, who they signed from the Penguins, who's been done a nice job for them. You don't hear much about. And both teams really have first-year goalies. Mary coming in for the Penguins, and boy, Mike Sullivan, one of the few mistakes he made was switching to Marc-Andre Fleury in the middle of the Eastern Conference Finals, and he rectified that mistake just in time. And they won in seven.
Yeah.
And the Sharks signed Martin Jones, who was Jonathan Quick's backup. And so they've gotten really good contributions from their additions in the offseason. I've picked against the Sharks in every round this playoffs. And I'm on board now, but just because I'm superstitious, I'm going to pick the Penguins in seven because I really want the Sharks to win. last thing, and I don't know if we'll get this and final thoughts in, Gordon, but have you the NBA Finals will not start until Thursday, and we're still waiting. The Cavaliers make it by taking out the Raptors, really winning those last two games in convincing fashion. But the Warriors, who people were counting out after they were down 3-1 and getting their hat handed to them, have come back with two pretty good comeback victories over the Thunder the last two games. And we're going to Game 7 Monday night, Gordon. What do you see happening there?
It's hard to win three in a row. I mean, it's very hard to win three in a row. So, and they're still kind of, they're still not playing with a full deck. So I like Oklahoma City to win that.
Okay. All right. I might have to do mine in archive, Gordon, but you got about 2 minutes here, a little less than 2 minutes for your final thought if you want to jump in there.
My final thought? Well, this is kind of an easy one. I know this may be a better one set for Veterans Day, but Memorial Day is coming up tomorrow. And, I like to spend a lot of time looking at stats from different sports, and you look at baseball stats. And, you see in the 40s how many players, great players, just missed 2-3 years for military service, sometimes right in the prime of their career. It's really something you probably wouldn't see now. And it was really a special thing that those guys did that, and a lot of guys asked to be on the front lines when they didn't have to be, and I'm sure some were injured or killed in action. I can't really name any off the top of my head, but we're a sports show, and we have Veterans Day coming up, and Memorial Day coming up, and I just kind of wanted to take the opportunity to merge those two together.
Yeah, thank you, It's a very poignant thought and something we should remember Memorial Day. It's not just about barbecues and hamburgers and whatever. I'll be able to squeeze my final thought in here. It is a historic day here in PhillyConnects.com, Philly Sports Talk, because my final thought is praising LeBron James, which you don't hear from me all that often. But he is headed to his sixth straight NBA final. He is the eighth player in NBA history to do that, and all the others were part of that Celtics dynasty 50 years ago. So LeBron James, his teams, the Cavaliers and the Heat, have won 18 consecutive Eastern Conference playoff series. Hey, I'm going to give the devil his due. LeBron James is a great, great player. This is an amazing accomplishment. Thank you for listening. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. For Gordon Glantz, I am Eric Fisher. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.